as an IC leader, your responsibility is to set a vision for the product based on qualitative and quantitative insights.
These are originally live chat sessions that I held, and you can join them in the future every Tuesdays at 5 p.m. PST on sales.n.pixels on Instagram. My name is Koji, and this is Sales and Pixels.
So my guest today is Dave Ikui. He's a staff product designer at Lyft. He worked in different cities with innovation and one of the most well-known design consultancies around the world, IDEO, Frog Design, Jord, and Accenture. He also co-founded a Berlin-based startup that received a grant from the EU and Federal Ministry for Economic Affairs and Energy. Hey, David.
Hello. Hi, Koji.
Hey, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Awesome. Better now. All right. Well, thanks for accepting my invite. And I'm, you know, super blessed to have you today. Super excited with the conversation. And yeah, let's get started.
I'm excited.
All right. Okay. So I want to start with something about your background. I know you were born in Nigeria and you grew up in Germany. So how this mix of cultures impacted on you and your principles at work and your principles in general as a person too?
Yeah, I would say it impacted me quite a lot. So my mom is German, my dad is Nigerian. And so I grew up between pretty much contrasting cultures. And I think that gave me a lot of perspective. It also made me capable to, you know, adapt to different environments and situations. For me, there was never really a right way to do things or a wrong way to do things, because mm-hmm. I always was conflicted with very different perspectives. And I think it depends on, for example, when it comes to decision making, on the beliefs that people bring to the table. So depending on the beliefs and values, I think there are different outcomes and truths that you can create. And so one thing that I value a lot is curiosity. The way I just grew up made me always curious for, you know, different ways of thinking, values and approaches to problem solving. And that's also now why I really love to immerse myself into just completely different environments and cultures, which I used to satisfy by traveling to different places, which we now can't do. But yes. I'm looking forward to do that again. And so the level of curiosity that I always had, I think also made me become a product designer today. Mm-hmm. When I think back, I got my first computer when I was 11 or 12 years old. And the same curiosity that I always had drove me to wanting to learn about digital products and everything that the digital space provides. I started learning programming by myself a little bit, as well as digital design, human interaction. And later when I went on to study design, communication design and design school, I also found out about interaction design through IDEO. And I switched to one of the first programs of interaction design in Germany back then. And I was just fascinated by how technology and design can be combined. And I feel super lucky that I could, you know, combine those two interests, design and technology. To continue that path later on in school, when I studied for my master's thesis, I stumbled upon a new field, which was super exciting to me. So I was very curious about the impact of technology on behavior. I found out about persuasive design and behavior change through digital products. And I found that extremely fascinating, but also scary, how technology can shape people's behavior. As we now know, it brings tremendous challenges to society, but I also think that it is a huge opportunity for us. For example, in how we move around in everyday lives, and how we design our cities. Fast forward, that's how I landed at Lyft. I'm very excited about the space and the potential to change behavior for the better.
Right. Interesting. Yeah, it's a nice story. I'm also like mixed cultured person. My father is Japanese, but I was born in Brazil. My mother is Native American, I would say, Native Latin American. So it was a mix for me, and I think like having those mix of cultures when you grow up is just like opens your mind for so many other things that are a little beyond where you are, a little beyond like the established things that are around you. So it's interesting that you're saying that.
Yeah, I think it does definitely have a lot of challenges, right? Like identity is one thing that's always challenging. Like what are you? What am I? Am I German? Am I Nigerian? When I'm in Germany, I'm Nigerian. If I'm in Nigeria, I'm German or a European. So there are challenges, but on the flip side, also a lot of good sides. And I think just the perspective or the level of perspective I have, I think, is mostly due to being exposed to contrasting cultures, which really Nigerian culture is so different to German culture. So it's
And you grew up with a mix of those cultures too, or do you had like a more strong culture when you grew up at home?
Yeah, definitely more German, since I grew up in Germany. So all my friends were German. The Nigerian was more sort of a flavor that my dad provided sometimes when we had guests coming from Nigeria or friends that also lived in Germany. But there are not that many Nigerians in Germany. So I would say mostly German. I'm mostly German with a little bit Nigerian.
Yeah, I feel the same way. The Japanese side was not super present, but like when we had dinners or we had something special coming, then like my mom would include something more Japanese to it, you know? And that's how I grew up. I think the technology side was very present in my life. And I think that's mostly because of my Japanese side. My father was he is an engineer. So that was like, even he was not like living with me in Brazil, but I had some sort of like influence of him even without the contact in the daily life. Yeah. All right. So I think this is a very interesting and I could topic, and I could like talk hours about it. But let's talk a little bit about leadership. And you are a staff designer, and a lot of designers don't know how to follow as a leader, like what career they follow as a leader. Should they be a manager or should they actually be an IC? And just to clarify, some people ask like, how can I, be a leader, but at the same time not lose the craft of design and can still like execute and, get my hands dirty creating things myself instead of just in some cases be a manager, which It's a totally different type of role. So I'm curious about that, like how do you see DIC as a leader, and how did you kind of like follow that path in your career?
Yeah, that's a very interesting topic that I discuss very often with coworkers and mentors. I think intuitively people think of leadership by managing people. Managing people brings inherent power and maybe therefore also opportunities to lead. But that belief that exists in our industry is, in my opinion, very unfortunate. I think that many people go into people management because there are more examples that exist today than there are for high level and high performing ICs. And so I think we have to change that over time. I see that as a problem, but actually also as an opportunity. Because of if you think of it, at the end of the day, who really creates the product or services or ICs? And how do you, as a company, set yourself apart from competitors? I think that's mainly through products and services which the individual contributors create. So there is a lot of opportunity for impact by, you know, just designing or defining products. And we have to think about the responsibilities for managers and ICs more strictly, I think, in the industry. To me, personally, a great manager clears the path for ICs to succeed. They set the vision for the team. Besides helping ICs achieve their career goals, they also set up efficient processes within their teams. They help to resolve org challenges and make sure that their reportees work on challenges that fit their skills and their ambitions. So my manager just told me last week, when you shine, I shine. And I think that is exactly the mindset that a manager needs to have. On the other side, as an IC leader, your responsibility is to set a vision for the product based on qualitative and quantitative insights, as well as business needs. So your understanding of what's really needed and where big opportunities are is very crucial. I think what's important as an IC leader is to build great relationships with user research, PMs, your engineers, even data scientists. What's important also is to be able to create clear narratives around the vision that you have and your ideas, which should be rooted in rational insights, again, qualitative and quantitative. Mm-hmm. And you also help as an IC leader to rally a team around your idea to make sure those ideas get prioritized and scoped. So there's a lot of work to be done after you have an idea, after you set a vision. Like, IC leadership is responsible for bringing your team along, rallying folks to realize the vision that you have to achieve the impact that is possible. Mm-hmm. I think usually the way that happens is by rigorously designing iterations, constantly seeking feedback from different stakeholders, cross-functional stakeholders in the team, mainly to make sure that you achieve a high quality bar, and also constantly designing, I think, helps And constantly talking to your team helps to maintain a momentum for the idea that you have.
Got it. Awesome. You talk about a couple of different things, right? Like building a vision, rallying the team, get everyone together. And I'm curious about like if there is one or two things that you would identify, right? Like just to clarify for people again, usually companies, they have a senior designer and staff is above senior, right? So look at yourself. How do you see the difference of your role as a staff designer? What are the main differences between your role as a staff designer and as a senior designer, for instance?
Yeah, great question. I think for me, it is really, and I think, first of all, there are different ways to progress in your career. And there are different, I'd say, focus areas that you can grow in as a staff designer. But for me personally, it is mostly around setting a vision and also being able to not just having the idea and putting it out there, having a great story, but then actually bringing that all the way through from the idea to execution and finally also impact. And that takes a lot of care, a lot of relationship building, and obviously a lot of iterations in your designs until you finally get to, you know, build things. And even once you get into the implementation phase, there's a ton of work to do to make sure that the initial idea and the vision that you had gets executed in the right way. So for me personally, staff really means being able to you know, initiate projects based on a strong vision, which is rooted in, again, the qualitative and quantitative insights. And then following that all the way through until you implement it and have clear impact on the business and users.
Got it. That's great. And it's interesting that you're talking about like the vision, but also how the vision gets executed, and that includes a lot of like cross-functional collaboration, right?
Right, and I think that's why we call it leadership. Leading to me means, you know, leading a team, bringing people along, getting people behind your idea, and also up-leveling people by, you know, setting examples. I think that that you can, you know, make people successful and not just yourself.
Awesome. Cool. So I know this next question, it's a very frequent question too. I think the IC one is very, very common question. This one, it's a big question. And I know you have a lot of experience to share with us today. But you worked at IDEO, Frog Design, some of the greatest design consultancies, and now you work in a tech company building products in-house. What are the main differences in your perspective between working in a consultancy versus working in a tech company that builds their own products?
Yeah, so I think both have pros and cons. To me, the main difference is the type of impact you have. In a consultancy or design agency, the impact is more on the client before you have impact on the customer. You do have impact on the customer, but there's always a client in the middle. And the design process is user-centered, but at the end of the day, you're selling your solution to the client. I think the best consultancy work in my experience was always when you were very close to the client, when your client actually became the partner, and you didn't have those boundaries. So the boundaries get blurred more. What I do like about working at design agencies is really the design process, because it felt more protected. You're surrounded by mostly designers, and there's no one that tries to really define your process internally or change your process other than other designers. But besides that, you're much more protected in the design process, which I think is great. In fact, for me, it was really, really good to really learn the craft, to learn about the design process. Most of the craft skills that I have today, I learned in consultancies. So I really appreciated the time there as well. And you also get thrown into new spaces. For every project, you basically have to relearn how to swim, and constantly having new challenges really helped me to uplevel my skills much faster. But I think on the other hand, product companies have a very different set of challenges. You have to deal with more stakeholders that are not designers and have their own expectations of the process for the product and even for the design. And sometimes you have to really negotiate what's part of the MVP. And I think what I've learned over time is you have to think about MVP, but then also always about the end goal. Thinking about, okay, what can we do first to validate this idea, to see if this can actually have impact on people and the business? But you always have to have this end goal in mind, because no one else is really thinking about that. I think that's mostly...
And how quality fits on this journey here, right?
Right, yes. Quality is definitely also very important, because even though it's a responsibility of everyone, I think designers are the ones that have to take care of quality more than anyone else. The design police. And yeah, we have the ability to do that too, yeah. So yeah, we are the police of quality, if you want to call it that way. But I think back to MVP and final vision, those two are important, but then also the steps in between. So most folks think about the MVP. What can we launch tomorrow? Engineers and product management, which of course is important. And you as a designer, I think you are responsible for not just thinking about, okay, what can we do in the future, but what is after MVP? What's the V1? What's the V2? What's the V3? And sometimes it also requires more, strategic thinking on how to achieve those incremental steps over time to achieve what you have in mind for the future.
Right. Very cool. I think this, again, huge topic to debate for hours, but... Okay, I want to go back to the quick discussion we had around your journey and how you got interested on technology and transportation, and you joined Lyft. And I want to take a connection to the fact that you grew up in Germany, and then there's Netherlands, there's Denmark. Those are all great examples of cities designed around people instead of cars. So how this impacted on your passion for transportation, and what US can learn from some of those European cities, in your opinion?
Yeah, well, I think European cities have one unfair advantage. they were built before cars existed. So I think many US cities were built after that, or, you know, during the time. And like LA is a city that was built for cars and not people. In Europe, you have more cities that are walkable and bikeable, have better public transit and more places where, you know, people can just naturally hang out. But I think that's mainly because they were built before those cars even existed. And I think in cities in the US have sort of a chicken and egg problem now, because we have all these massive cities that are built for cars. And mm-hmm. it seems very hard to transform that, because you don't really want to bike in a city where the distances are extremely, you know, far, and where it's dangerous to just bike. So the chicken and egg problem that I mentioned is, we have to, of course, get better infrastructure here in the cities. But on the other hand, somehow people also have to adapt new behaviors more and more. And because it's such a complex problem, I don't think that cities alone can really solve that. I think that companies like Lyft have the ability to help in that behavior change, which I'm super excited about. If we can get more bikes to people, if we can make them more accessible in cities, and also if we can raise or bring more awareness to the options that exist per ride. Sometimes, or very often actually, it's more convenient and of course more mm-hmm. affordable to take a bike or to take public transit, but people just don't really know because they're used to their habits. And so I think by raising awareness, by making alternative options more accessible, we can slowly change people's behavior and people's habits. But at the end of the day, it's definitely also a responsibility of the city to, of course, provide better public transit, but then also better infrastructure for people to bike.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that I found very interesting during the pandemic is that in San Francisco, some streets are closed or they're like partially closed for cars that are not like, if you live in that street and you have to park your car, that's fine, but it's closed for the rest. So they call it, I think, slow streets. And in the Mission during the weekend, it's pretty nice. They close everything and the restaurants can use the space from the streets. So it's like, almost like an expansion of the parklet. Plus a lot of people riding bicycles and things like that. It's really nice to see that happening, even though it's more because of a pandemic, but it's an interesting take on the streets.
Yeah, absolutely. That's, I think, an interesting side effect that this has. When it first started, I remember I walked around the Mission here in San Francisco, and I was walking with a friend. I was like, oh, this feels kind of like Europe.
Yeah.
Just walking around, having more people on the roads, being able to, in some areas, walk on the street, and then having some live music here and there at some corners. It's interesting to see how different it just feels if you have more people walking around. It also feels safer, I think. So I think that's an interesting side effect, and I hope that it can persist for longer, that we are now learning from this time of how to better use our roads, not just for cars, but actually for people.
Right. Makes sense. All right. So now I want to open a section here called rapid fire questions. So basically I give you a random prompt and you give me a very short answer. Are you ready? All right. So the first one is something you always dream of when you were a kid. Nice. One thing that you wish will happen in 2021?
Oh, wow. In 2021, I mean, now that we talked about how cities have changed, I would say it would be great for it to just continue this way. I really hope that we don't just go back to our old habits. So I think there are lots of learnings that we are making, I think, as societies in this pandemic. And I really hope that those persist.
Good point. Something you're very proud of as a designer.
Something I'm very proud of as a designer is working on a topic, which is transportation, that I'm very passionate about. And I think to me, transportation is an ever, growing need. It's always, people always have to get around, more and more. And it's also a complex problem because it really defines how you feel living in a city. It really depends on how people move around. I think it obviously has implications on climate change. It's one of the biggest contributors to climate change. I think in the US, it is even the biggest. So it feels great to work on a challenge that has many, many micro challenges, but then when you zoom out, also something that is worth working on. And I'm very proud of that, being able to work on this.
Awesome. Last one, regret.
Oh, wow. Regrets. Regrets. Let me think. This might sound bad, but I think I regret just staying here in the US. I maybe should have gone to Germany and stay there because now things look so much better there. I mean, obviously I love living in the Bay Area in the US, and I see myself also living here for longer, but I think just this year has been quite challenging for very unfortunate reasons, because it could have gone very different, but it's just the way things were handled here is
Totally understand you. Is there one specific thing that really bothers you right now? Like, I think this is a very important topic, to be honest.
It's just that it takes so long for us to get back to, I mean, no country is back to normality, but I think it is just taking way longer than it's necessary. And that's just because certain decisions have been made, which
are the lack of them.
Yeah, wrong decisions or no decision.
All right, thank you. Okay, you survived at the quick fire questions. Nice, hardcore prototyping. Okay, so we are unfortunately getting to the end here, but I have one last question from the audience. Mayuma is asking, what's your favorite research method and why?
My favorite research methods. Oh, there's so many. I really, really appreciate foundational research. Mm-hmm. And so I recently worked with our researcher, Dua, who presented great insights based on or from diary studies. And I think that's super, super undervalued. I think we need that more. We really need to understand people's motivation and general behavior. And I think diary studies is a great way to just get a glimpse into people's lives and how they use your product, or in our case, how they get around, how they use transportation. So I would say diary studies.
And David, to wrap up, I want to give you some space to send any message to the world, whatever you want to say. But thank you so much for joining me today. I'm super, feel super instructed about many things after this conversation. So thanks for sharing your knowledge today.
Thanks. I really appreciate it. Final words. Well, I think 2020 has been a really, really hard year for many of us. So I think what's most important to me is that we all are not too egoistic and we think of each other. So one great thing in our design team is that I almost feel like we bonded more even though we're distant from each other. But in our team, every Monday morning, we talk about our weekends, for example, which is a great way to, you know, just not only think about work, but also care about each other. And I wish that is something that everyone does more and more, even post-pandemic.
Awesome. Cool. Thank you so much again. I want to say that I'm here every Tuesdays at 5 p.m., 8 p.m. ET, with a product or a UX professional. So that's it. Thank you so much. And the conversation today will be available as a podcast next week too. So stay tuned. And thank you again, David. Have a great rest of your week.
Thank you, Koji. This was super fun.
Awesome. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
My name is Koji, and this is Cells and Pixels. Every Tuesdays at 5 p.m. PST on cells.n.pixels on Instagram. Thanks for listening.